Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
You're listening to The Takeaway. I'm Bridget Bergen, in for Melissa Harris-Perry. In recent months, there's been a disturbing pattern of bomb threats against historically black colleges and universities, or HBCUs. And at least 36 HBCUs have been targeted, and that includes threats made against 18 of them on the first day of Black History Month. Now the White House is boosting funding for HBCUs with the aim of bolstering campus security and mental health services. Here's Vice President Kamala Harris speaking at a press conference last week.
These threats have been made in phone calls and instant messages and emails and online posts. These threats have brought fear and anxiety to places of peace, to schools where young people live and learn.
In addition to the bomb threats, hate crimes against black people have been on the rise in the U.S. According to the FBI, there was an almost 50% increase between 2019 and 2020. For more on this, we're joined now by Dr. Greg Carr, Associate Professor of Afro-American Studies at Howard University and Adjunct Professor of Howard Law School. Dr. Carr, great to have you back.
Always good to be with you. Thanks for the invitation.
How have these bomb threats impacted campus community life?
Well, you know, it's interesting, Bridget. There are, I think, two things at play here. Number one is, of course, the immediacy of this latest round of threats of violence against our historically black institutions. And so there is the heightened awareness, the anxiety. But the other kind of dimension of this is that this is part of a recurring trauma. Mm-hmm. And in many ways, bomb threats are a reminder that in the United States, African people have too often been cast as the shock troops of American democracy. There's never been a time when we weren't vigilant. And so this is unfortunately a kind of reinforcement of what in some ways might be being interpreted as an enduring kind of heightened alert as it relates to these schools.
Since you brought up the history, how does this compare to threats we've seen in the past against HBCUs?
You know, it's interesting, actually, threats like this predate HBCUs. You know, Alexander Crummell and some of his colleagues who were teenagers out of New York City, the New York African Free School, they were going to school in New England. The threat of them going up there to an integrated school led some of the fine citizens of that town to hitch their oxen to the building and drag it into the swamp and then set it on fire. So that was the 19th century. When HBCUs were founded, there were threats of violence. You're not going to build here. You're not going to work here. And those persisted through the 20th century. During the Civil Rights Movement, you see threats against these institutions. And a generation ago, in 1999, there were two explosions near the campus of Florida A&M in late August, 1999. And the FBI made an arrest within weeks of an unemployed white guy in Florida. And so this latest round is part of a long, long history, unfortunately, of threats against these spaces.
You're also a graduate of Tennessee State University, which is an HBCU. Do you remember being concerned for your safety during your time there as a student? Were there external threats a concern then?
You know, it's interesting. I was in school at Tennessee State in the early 80s. And this was during the period of the first Jesse Jackson campaign, 1984. I actually worked on that campaign as a student volunteer. And we never felt threatened in terms of violence, no. But there was always a sense that this is a black campus in a black part of town. And many of our HBCUs, particularly in the deeper South, are in state capitals, in urban areas, and they are unfortunately part of the pattern of residential segregation in the South. So if you're in Tallahassee, you know, we kind of know if you're around Florida A&M's campus, you're probably engaged there. If you are at Jackson State in Mississippi in the state capital, you're probably one of the people of that in that community. But we would never not a hyper aware kind of thing. And I don't even think that's the case right now, quite frankly, Bridget, on our campus today.
So let's talk more about how these threats have changed or affected campus life today. Some of this federal funding include specific money for mental health services. How much has there been a mental health impact for students and faculty? I mean, you talked about convening some of your colleagues across some other campuses.
Yes. Well, for faculty, And we know that a university is essentially the students and the faculty. Everybody else is in there in some form of support. For us, we are concerned about our students because in many ways at HBCUs, we kind of perform as surrogate parents of sorts. And what we're seeing with our young people, you know, each generation is different, but, you know, they have spent the last 2 years at home. Mm-hmm. So the idea now that they are away from home, many of them for the first time, you know, the first two classes of folks around the country, freshmen and sophomores, basically high school students who are now on campus, these types of threats are completely new to them. And they don't have even an awareness of a generation before. So we've kind of been tending to their mental health. And for us, you know, that takes a toll on us, you know, because we feel responsible for them, you know, more than as professors. We feel responsible for them as kind of like extended family.
Aside from this recent funding, what additional support do HBCUs need right now?
Well, Bridget, I can say three words. Catch these cats. this is the problem. I mean, you know, everything is nice. I see Project Serve and we understand the nice words and the platitudes. But as I said, in 99, there were two explosions that went off near FAM. And they had that guy arrested within a couple of weeks. Mm-hmm. Let's get busy. We don't want to hear, oh, we got some people. No, this is the Federal Bureau of Investigation. And the message it sends is that Black lives don't matter. You know, the politics of individuals and elective office is very nice and all this kind of thing. But let's be very clear. That is no substitute for catching the people who are making these threats, particularly in a society when even breathing hard somehow gets recorded in some surveillance device. Let's get these guys.
So we've had conversations about the increase in white supremacy and violence driven by white supremacy in this country that has come in stark relief in the past 2 years in particular with a long arc of history. Do you feel like that is the driving factor behind some of these threats?
Oh, absolutely. The United States of America has never been a stable proposition when it comes to race. And the idea of Black aspiration, of non-white aspiration in general, is very threatening to folk for whom a promise of American success has been linked to race. And in many ways, particularly when you start substituting race for achievement, the idea that Black folk are going to school is very unsettling to folk who don't seem to understand that getting an education improves the whole country. So, I don't really know how we solve this unless it means, and of course it does mean this, dismantling this racial hierarchy in this country. And of course, that's the larger proposition that we still seem to be failing at.
Dr. Greg Carr is an associate professor of Afro-American Studies at Howard University. Dr. Carr, thanks for joining us.
Bridget, it's a real pleasure to be with you.